I used to think that the main problem was money. I was seeing when I started doing wholesaling and real estate investments and getting into this whole space, I was like, nope, everybody wants top dollar. Everybody, like, those were my glasses, right? That was my perspective, my cognition and things. And because everything mattered to, or the dollar amount in, was a big thing in my head, I thought that's what everybody else was seeing. But it's really not. Once you have conversations and you actually care about bringing in legitimate solutions to sellers, the deals kind of work themselves out, really.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Rafael Cortez, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, man. It's an honor.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. You're based in Phoenix, right? Phoenix, Arizona.
Correct.
That's fantastic. I love it. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes to the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Well, in real estate investments, 2009. I launched my first business, though, when I was 21, right around 2007. And my first business, I used to be a fireman. So I started as a fireman when I was 19. I launched my first business at the age of 21. And that was a medical transportation business, non-emergency. And then I transitioned into real estate investment. I've been used to have my own business, from an early age and kind of, putting up with the struggles and the hustle and all that. Long story short, I sold that transportation business in 2014, 15. And in 2009, though, while I still had it, I started doing real estate investment. I began fixing and flipping just because I had some cash. I wanted to allocate and then invest and diversify. And I was starting to learn all those things, all those words, right? And I came across, the possibility of flipping a property. I ended up breaking even on that first couple of deals. I mean, it was a nightmare just because I was trying to do everything myself. I actually kind of, I like to think that I began backwards, right? I started flipping and then I got into wholesaling. So yeah, fast forward, a couple of years from that, I have a degree. I'm an organizational psychologist. So I do a lot of coaching and consulting for businesses altogether. So now I own a real estate brokerage in Phoenix. We do traditional sales, commercial stuff as well. And then I own a wholesaling business, a fix and flip business, and then my organizational psychology practice where I coach, consult. And then I have an education business where I focus on coaching real estate wholesale to beginning entrepreneurs.
That's a lot of moving parts. How do you give attention to the various businesses that need you in a meaningful way?
Systems, brother. Systems. I used to think that I had to micromanage. And like, if you want something done right, you got to do it yourself type of deal. And that led to me burning out when I was around 26, 27 years old. And this was during the transportation business company. The hard lesson there was like, we can't do it all ourselves. Even if you have one thing to focus on, inevitably, when it starts growing and new parts start to get attached to the business, you got to have a way to delegate that. So I'm a big, big believer in automation, delegation, and then elevation of yourself as a business owner, as a CEO. You grow not just from the business standpoint, but from the personal standpoint. And I've learned to delegate well and then set up good systems. I think that's, some of the stuff that has helped quite a bit along the way in terms of hiring and bringing people on board and, kind of creating an overall picture for the direction of whatever business it is. I think it's one of the biggest challenges that we can have as entrepreneurs and investors, for that matter. But when you have the ability to do that, and then you throw some practical strategies like, time blocking and being adamant about your schedule, I mean, you can make it work.
The two businesses that come, your traditional residential real estate brokerage and then your wholesaling business, seem like they would almost be competitors in their own right. You have probably people in your brokerage who want to get houses under contract to list them, to sell. Yeah. And then you have your wholesalers that want to get them under contract to flip the contract.
Well, yeah, we have actually a lot of my agents do wholesale. So it's interesting, man. But when I set off, I didn't see everything like it's working now. So I'm going to set up a wholesale operation. I started doing the wholesaling, by myself first. I jumped into another company where I cut the learning curve. So that helped me a lot under somebody else's guidance. And that was amazing. So I kind of learned, the ropes of wholesaling. I set up my wholesaling operation. And then next thing you know, like, okay, cool. I'm going to throw fix and flip again into it because now I feel like a little bit more of a notion of what I'm doing. That whole leg just kind of came to it. One thing that I started noticing was we would have conversations about No, I don't want to sell my house because I'm not in that, type of distress. And you got to be completely honest, like in wholesaling, and I don't know if your audience is very, familiar with what wholesaling is, but it's about, at the end of the day, we're trying to solve a problem for the seller. There's some type of distress, there's some type of headache, something that they can't deal with. That's why they're selling, via the wholesale route, right? If their best course of action is to list the property, we right out tell them. Even when I didn't have a license, I would let them know, listen, you're going to make more money if you list the property. So anyways, they started noticing that, I could have gotten that listing. there was a lot of business just falling through the cracks there. I was like, I'm going to get my real estate license. And yeah, so I did. I got the real estate license. Now I'm doing wholesale and fix and flip, and I'm walking around with a real estate license. Then just, I started meeting people and they asked me for advice and whatnot. Next thing you know, it's like, hey, I have a license. Why don't you set up a brokerage? So kind of like one thing started leading to the next. It's crazy, but we don't have to have everything figured out, right? As we take action, the master plan kind of, begins to come together. And we ended up with this brokerage with, a good chunk of agents. Most of them they're well aware about wholesaling. We follow the same professionalism and fiduciary that we have in the real estate side, traditional real estate. We'll bring that to the wholesale side, which makes things work. But yeah, no, they don't compete at all. I mean, on the contrary, they feed each other.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, how do you structure it on the wholesale side when you have somebody that needs to sell, they can't go the traditional route, but they maybe came to you through the traditional channels of, hey, your company, can you guys list this for me? It's like, this doesn't work.
I mean, yeah.
How does that conversation go? And then how do you, because you have a fiduciary duty to them, and obviously as a wholesaler, the objective is to maximize the spread between what you pay the seller and what the buyer then ends up closing on it for. I mean, that's what you take. So how do you navigate that?
So good question. We have a process of how to come up with the wholesale offer, right? At the end of the day, like the beginning, I mean, I call it a discovery conversation. You're having a discovery conversation with a seller, anybody who's got a property. I mean, it actually transfers over to commercial as well because we've locked a bunch of commercial deals, using the same framework. So you have incredibly, right? I used to think that the main problem was money. I was seeing when I started doing wholesaling and real estate investments and getting into, this whole space, like, nope, everybody wants top dollar. Everybody, that's their main problem. Those were my glasses, right? That was my perspective, my cognition and things. And because everything mattered or the dollar amount was a big thing in my head, I thought that's what everybody else was seeing. But it's really not. Once you have conversations and you actually care about bringing in legitimate solutions to sellers, the deals kind of work themselves out, really. I'll give you some examples, right? You walk in, somebody's in the middle of a divorce, somebody's getting relocated, somebody has to move the property and it's a time issue. They're going to be willing to make less on that property, right? Because you're solving the time issue, you're giving them the convenience of not waiting around. And that's one thing. Repairs, I mean, it's a classic one. Condition, physical condition of the property. I mean, that's huge. You don't have to do any repairs. You don't have to worry about appraisals. You don't have to, all those headaches. Believe it or not, one of the most common things or issues that we get is people having a problem with other people walking through their house. They're adamant about privacy. It's because, I don't know, they're used to having a mess on the house and then, they might be embarrassed about that or just private. It goes both ways, right?
Right.
But yeah, that's a huge thing. Like the first time that happened to me, I was like, what? You're willing to part away with $30,000, $40,000, less so people don't walk through your house, through your property. Am I hearing this right? At the end of the day, every situation is different, right? But if we actually take a moment to slow down and have some critical thinking into how can we come in and help them out, the answer is going to lay out by themselves. And then we just present our offer. We never convince anybody to sell. We don't do any of that stuff. We present the offer and we let them know, this is what we can do. This is the number that we would have to be at. And then we start negotiating a little bit back and forth and whatnot. But I mean, if it works, it works. And it's a volume game. Sam, think about it this way, right? Like if you have 100 people want to sell, there's 100 people out there that they made up their mind, they need to sell the property. Only 3 to 5 of those are going to sell to us. So we're looking for a very small percentage of the market. But when you go to markets, for example, Phoenix, right? We have 1.2, 1.4 million single family owners. I mean, that's a big market. There's plenty of properties out there. Like the idea is, or the belief is that, there's not enough, to go around, but it's a volume thing. Once you set up the process to actually process volume and get volume through the door and fill up the pipeline, you're going to be okay.
Yeah. Tell me about that process that you feel like people could take from a page out of your book on the residential side and apply that to their commercial acquisitions?
So I break it down, and it's somewhat of a like a business model crash course, right? I break it down into six stages. It's the first stage, it's going to be sourcing. And the reason I break it down into six stages is because we know what to hire for, where to hire, and then more importantly, you're able to see where the bottlenecks are at, if you have any bottlenecks as you go through the business, which 99.9% of the businesses do. And the other 0.1% are lying because there's always bottlenecks. But you're able to identify them, right? If you segment, if you break it down like this, and it doesn't matter if you have a team of one or two people, or you have 10, 20, the process, the framework is still the same. And it goes, you know, residential, commercial, and whatnot. The first stage is going to be sourcing. You have to have a process for sourcing your deals. In our case, we go heavy on cold calling. We go heavy on SMS, marketing, Facebook ads, PPC. I mean, those are all sourcing strategies, right? Basically, what we're looking was just plowing through records and looking for, gauging for interest. That's all. We're pre-qualifying anything. We're just sourcing. And this is where, say that you're reaching out to 10,000 people via cold calling. Maybe 1,000 are going to raise their hand and say, okay, give me an offer. A lot of those, I mean, great majority of those are going to be retail or just tire kickers. So that's the first stage. The second stage is to pre-qualify. You come in and then you pre-qualify. We have a four pillars of pre-qualification that go into the pre-qual stage or the conversion stage. And that's based on timeline, motivation, condition, and then the price. So if those four things are there, I mean, we know for a fact that we have a deal. Like we're going to be able to make it work. So it's timeline, condition, motivation, and price. The timeline, they want to sell within the next 60 days. The condition, physical condition helps a lot. It's not the end all be all, but it helps a lot. So if it's in distress or whatnot, we can come in, then there's some value add, right? What's the motivation? What type of situational distress is there? Is it a divorce? Is it a relocation? Is it just too much, caretaking of the property? Are they getting older? What's that? That gives us a framework of how to kind of, have that pre-qualifying conversation and get to that deeper root of the problem. And then of course, the price, right? We have a range on the price point. The third stage is acquisitions. So after they get pre-qualified, then we send them over to acquisitions rep and they negotiate the deal back and forth. They do a full property analysis. Comps, cap rates, if you're in that space, get the signature done and dispo. I mean, you got to have a solid buyer's base, a solid buyer's list. That's like the holy grail for all wholesalers, a solid buyer's list, right? Because the better it is, the faster you can dispo the deals, meaning you can sell the contract. And what we're doing is we're selling the contract. We're not actually selling the property in wholesale. So that most businesses stop at that stage and then they just start a cycle again. I add two more stages to it. And this is like religiously, we do this on a weekly basis. We just go over all the deals in my company. The fifth is measuring. So we track KPIs, their scorecards, there's accountability, right? For each one of the roles that take place. And we track, for example, what was the reach and lead generation? What were the amount of offers that were actually made and sent out? What's the conversion rate on those? So there's a set of KPIs that we follow for each one of the roles. And that's how the whole machine just kind of stays, accountable. The people are, they know what targets, they're supposed to hit. And there's direction. I mean, more importantly, right? It's a high degree of accountability. The last thing that we do at stage six is improvement. Every time we go through a deal, we have a little set of questions. So we ask ourselves, okay, what could we have done better? Where did we leave money on the table in that deal? How did the negotiation went? So we start kind of going through the whole process, dissect it. And what didn't work, I mean, we try not to do it again in the future. What did work, we try to, build it into a SOP, standard operating procedure or protocol. So, I mean, six stages, right? But building a machine like that, like I have the ability to step away from it because I have a director of operations that knows what to follow. Then the team is right below it. It took a minute to get it to that point, but the same framework can be applied for, any of the specialties. I mean, commercial, absolutely. Luxury, whatever. Yeah.
100%, man. Yeah. I mean, because those are all things that, minus maybe if your goal is to acquire real estate and on the commercial side versus wholesale it, obviously you're probably going to skip step four of what disposition looks like.
Yeah. Dispo.
Yeah. Even that's right. Part of it, though, in the long term, just maybe not something you write in on the front end. I love any time that there's organization and a consistent pattern, like, hey, this is what we do every single time. I think when, to your point, you can step away and go, all right, let the machine, let the people do it. And I'm going to do either something else or nothing, depending on whatever it is you want
Yeah.
That's what it looked like. So that's really awesome. Tell me about your guys' commercial real estate holdings, if any. You know, what's that look like for you? And I guess, why have you invested in the commercial space?
So my background is multifamily. I mean, multifamily, I mean, the largest one I had personally in my personal portfolio, 16 units. I mean, it's nothing, you know, too crazy, right? I'm pivoting into more of a retail and executive office spaces. And that's just coming from somebody else who knows a lot more about commercial than I do. So I'm following their lead on that. So yeah, I've had a couple of multifamily buildings and it works well for that, you know, residual. One thing, I don't know, right now I'm in the middle of a pivot, right? I'm pivoting into commercial and retail space and executive offices in that sense. And then I'm also pivoting to the software as a service. So, you know, space.
You got your hands full, man. Tell me, you know, a certain amount of money I think that you could make on every potential residential deal. But I would think if you are able to take that same system and apply it to acquiring 16, 32, 48 unit multifamily buildings, that the margins would just be that much bigger. Has that ever been a consideration for you?
Yeah, it has. The only thing that holds me back is from jumping in, you know, fully into, for example, the multifamily space and whatnot, is the management. I know there's big opportunity on Airbnb and whatnot. Right now, I did sell a lot of my portfolio about a year and a half ago, and location wasn't stellar where I had the properties. You know, that was one of the things I figured, yeah, I wanted to capitalize on that sort of thing. Like the model works. So if you're taking something like this approach, you can actually, you know, just all you do is change the campaign, right? So we're doing campaigns for single family. What do you do now? You do campaigns for multifamily and then process them through a pipeline. Same thing. The average deal that we get, I mean, we do real well in wholesaling. I think the average deal, it's about $34,000 and we keep it steady. So I like to measure the level of my headaches. We keep it steady to about 12 deals a month. I mean, it's a pretty healthy revenue with a small team. So right. There's not a lot of overhead. There's not a lot of things that come back on us and whatnot. It just gives me the opportunity to create revenue, right? And then just allocate it wherever. Right now, honestly, I'm looking at a few different things. So again, I mentioned software. We're developing software right now. In terms of holdings, I'm looking at the commercial space and executive office. And then I'm looking at crypto, like every other dude out there, right? It's like, what is going on there? I'm curious. So yeah, I mean, that's where I stand right now. And I mean, it's panning out well.
Yeah, I guess the question, which you've answered my question so right, was really, you know, what would prevent you or somebody else from taking the same system as opposed to wholesaling single family? They can wholesale, you know.
Yeah, no, nothing. I mean, all you do again is change their campaigns and then follow that same process. I actually have students in the country and they are looking specifically for, like, you know, 4 units or less, keep it, you know, commercial because of lending and whatnot. And then have others that are just aiming to big as they can a multifamily. It's a good market. It's a good, you know, space to play, right? I don't see anything that would hold anybody back in terms of why wouldn't you implement that and run with it. To us, it's just a choice. This is the shiny object, you know, like right now we're focused, we're doing real well on the track that we're on. And focus is key, man. I mean, the attention is key. I've gotten bitten before just because of, you know, getting spread too thin. And I tend to have, you know, tap into a couple of different things at the same time. And yeah, so like right now it's just focus. It's a scarcity. It's a luxury.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. I'm finishing a book now called Four Disciplines of Execution. And the number one thing they talk about in the beginning, it's like focus.
Yeah.
Like if you can learn to focus, then, you know, that's the first thing you've got to master. So I love hearing that yet again from somebody else. Rafael, I certainly appreciate you coming on the show today, telling us all about your business. Tell us about, you know, how you guys have scaled your various businesses, your kind of processes behind the multiple steps you take, and then just kind of the various things that you're also looking at as well on the commercial and other business interest sides. Tons of fun to learn about. Yeah, a very, very cool story and love what you're doing. So thanks for sharing it. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Well, I'm very active on all social medias. I have a lot of content on YouTube and Instagram. It's Rafael Cortez, CEO. That's RafaelCortez, CEO. You can find me there. I also have, if they want to do a download of the process that I just kind of mentioned, they can go to reiwholesaling.com and they can find it there as well.
Awesome. We will make sure we mention that there in the show notes as well. Rafael, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day.
My pleasure. Thank you, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor, And subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.